Maybe it was a largely 20th century thing, but Americans got used to the idea that each generation would do better financially than their parents. By many measures, that's not happening now like it used to. There are some serious downward pressures on upward mobility, and a lot of people considering what those pressures are. Oregon State University participated with several other schools in examining the distribution of upward mobility, or the lack of it, across the landscape, as in, are your chances better in the city or in the country? It might surprise you that the answer from this round of research is the country, or at least away from metropolitan counties. There's a lot to unpack in this study, so we turn to Bruce Weber, who led it. He's the Professor Emeritus of Applied Economics at Oregon State University and Director of the Rural Studies Program. Bruce, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning, Jeff. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. So first off, upward mobility is talked about a lot in America today, with great concern for whether it is greatly diminished. Was that part of the impetus for this research?
Of course it was, and I think the surprising thing for most of us in looking at the data that came out from a study at Harvard University and with some tax data was that upward mobility, that is moving, if you grow up in a low-income family, moving up in the distribution, was greater in rural places than in urban places, and on average, and the difference wasn't, it's a small difference on average, but it really changes a lot across the landscape. There are parts of this country where if you grow up in a low-income family, you don't hardly move up at all in the income distribution, and there are other places where you move well into the middle class, above the average income, if you grow up in a low-income family. I think the most surprising thing was how much it varied across the country and how much it depended on where you grew up, your average chances in life.
So you are the director of the Rural Studies Program. Is it a surprise even to you, though, to see that it seems like the further you are, or the closer, I guess, you are to a rural area, the further you are from a metro area, it seems to work better?
I think I was a little surprised by that. And although when you live in a rural area, and one of the reasons that rural areas do better is the social networks and the connections are stronger. And that's a factor that one of the most important factors one of the most important characteristics of the places that have high average upward mobility are the social networks that exist. The other thing is that the level of inequality in the county, the size of the middle class, also matters quite a bit. And in rural areas generally have more equal distribution of income across a larger middle class relative to cities. So the characteristics that are in rural places, I suppose it shouldn't have surprised me because the things that are characteristic of rural places are also things that support upward mobility.
That's interesting to think in those terms, though, that social networks are stronger in places where people live farther apart. I mean, you're right next to each other in the cities, but you don't necessarily know the people around you.
Well, I think the networks are more important in rural areas. I mean, I think that partly you know that you need the people around you to succeed. I think it's more obvious in rural places than it is in urban places. And part of the reason that the networks are stronger is that people grow up knowing that they depend on their neighbors to an extent that they don't in urban places.
Bruce Weber is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Professor Emeritus of Applied Economics and the Director of the Rural Studies Program at Oregon State University. He led a team of four researchers into what led to a paper published in June called Intergenerational Mobility of Low-Income Youth in Metropolitan and Non-Metropolitan America, a Spatial Analysis. As you've heard us describe it thus far, it indicates that perhaps the further you are from metro areas, the greater your chances of upward mobility. You can join the conversation on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. That term intergenerational mobility, is it what it sounds like, Bruce? We expect the children to be equally or more affluent than their parents?
Well, it's a more neutral term than that. It's just about how people move up in the distribution and they move down. I mean, some mobility is, if there is upward mobility, there's also got to be downward mobility. Our interest in this country is mostly in upward mobility because I think as you said in the introduction, the expectation is that people will generally or historically, the next generation has done better economically than their parents. This is as this research has pointed out in other studies that's no longer true. As true as it was, there's still upward mobility, but there's also downward mobility, and the expectation that you'll be economically better than your parents is less clear. It's less true now than it has been in the past. But there still are opportunities for upward mobility, and there are things that communities and the economy can do to support upward mobility.
Before we go digging into the research that you guys compiled in this country, I do notice comparisons to other advanced countries in your introduction. At this point in history, how does our intergenerational mobility compare with our peer countries?
Yeah, so if we're comparing ourselves to the other industrialized countries of the world, our mobility is lower than other countries. People point particularly to Europe and to Scandinavia, where mobility, if you grow up in a low-income family, your chances of succeeding economically are greater. There's greater movement across and up in the income distribution than in this country.
We talked about this as a spatial analysis. So is this? It sounds like a lot of plotting data points on maps.
Right. There's a lot of good data that shows distances across places, and there's a sense that our economic connections from rural areas to the cities are very important. There is an interdependence between rural and urban places. I think it's usually assumed that the rural places are dependent on the urban places for their economic success, and there's a sense in which, of course, that's true. Many of the services that rural people need are only available in cities. It's also true, of course, that much of what the urban areas need is produced in the rural areas. I think the surprising finding here, though, is that the farther you are from the center of the city, where the economic activity is concentrated, the farther you are from the city, the greater your chances for upward mobility. Which I think, again, it gets back to the lack of density that the lack of density and the fact that the people that have the most income and the most wealth tend to live in cities. The inequality is greater in the cities than the rural areas. I think the distance from cities implies both low density, need for social networks, and more equality of income, which is better to grow up in a place that has a stronger middle class and a less income rich poor gap.
All right, like in big cities, yeah, where you get really really wealthy people and really not wealthy people. What were some of the measures of upward mobility you tracked here, Bruce?
Well, the main measure that most of the research has focused on is what's called absolute upward mobility. That is, they looked at millions of tax records that were de-identified, and they knew where children lived, children who were born in the early 80s, they knew where they lived when they were in high school and what their parents' income was when they were in high school, and they were able to link that to what their income was when they were 30 years old. So, the measure was if you grew up at the 25th percentile. If when you were in high school, your parents were at the 25th percentile of the income distribution, that is low income, they knew that the adult income, they knew the adult income and they knew where they lived. So they could say that if you lived in Jefferson County, for example, and grew up in a certain, at this 25th percentile, you have it, your chances of making it to the 40th percentile or the 50th percentile was less than if you grew up, for example, in Wallowa County or in Crook County, which were places of high upward mobility. So the measure was where you ended up in the income distribution as an adult if you grew up in a low-income family in a particular county.
All right, that's pretty straightforward information then. You're looking at actual income from tax records.
Yes.
We're talking to Bruce Weber at the Oregon State University Rural Studies Program. He's the director and a professor emeritus, I should say, of applied economics. He led a study about intergenerational mobility and how it appears that from looking at distributions across the landscape that your chances of upward mobility are greater the farther you are from a metro area. You can join the conversation on the exchange, talk about your own experience, or ask some questions of the good doctor. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Bruce, you cite some other recent studies, and you do draw a fine line between, and I want to be careful how I word this, how place matters in intergenerational upward mobility and how space matters. What is the difference there?
Right. Okay, so place is just where you are on the map, and space is how far you, in our way of thinking, it's how far you live from other places. And mostly we are concerned about how far people live from the largest central cities. In Oregon, there was some relationship. Eastern Oregon, for example, has average higher mobility than the Valley. And the Valley, of course, is where the metropolitan areas are. So in one sense, Oregon is representative. If you're farther from Portland, you're likely to have higher mobility. But it's also more complicated than that because Eastern Oregon, equal distance from Portland in Eastern Oregon is better than equal distance south of Portland. The Willamette Valley generally and Southern Oregon have lower mobility than Eastern Oregon, and I think there's a difference. Part of that is related to the economic base of those places. There's of course forestry all over Oregon, but there's more farming is a more important activity east of the Cascades on average than it is in south of the Valley, for example, in southwest Oregon. So
there are a couple of maps in here. I want to bring in physically, because you're talking about places on the map now.
And
there's a national map that you pull from the research from Chetty from 2014 showing absolute upward mobility. And is it brighter colors indicate greater upward mobility, higher number, brighter color?
Well, so lighter. So the darker is places with lower mobility.
Okay.
The lighter shades are the ones, are higher upward mobility.
And the reason I ask the question is because you're immediately struck by how dark the whole southeastern United States looks.
That absolutely.
Upward mobility is not terribly good there if you're trying to improve your economic position.
That's right. And it's very high in the Great Plains. I mean, the very sparsely settled upper Great Plains is the place of highest average mobility, and the southeast United States is the place of the average lowest mobility, and part of that is race, and it's not just the race of the individual, but it's the race of the average racial mix of the place. So for example, there's higher concentrations of African Americans in the South, but the upward mobility of whites in the South is also less than upward mobility of whites in other parts of the country. So I think that the most significant finding here in talking about place is that it isn't your particular characteristics, it's the characteristics of the place you live that matter. So, for example, as I mentioned, the racial mix of a place, it's the mix of the place that affects everybody, not just people who are of particular races. That's also true for family structure, for example. Places with high concentrations of single mothers, for example, have lower average mobility than places with less concentrations of single parents. But it isn't whether your particular family has a single mother family, or it's that the area that you live in, if there's a higher concentration, everyone is affected to some extent by the characteristics of the place. And I think that's a striking finding of their research.
So are the results different, for example, if you're a single mother or a non-high school graduate in a rural area versus an urban area?
So the level of education isn't a characteristic that matters. I guess in some sense it is. The rate of high school dropouts is a characteristic of a place that matters. So if you're a place with high number of high school dropouts, and they use that as their measure of school quality, that negatively affects people, but it more negatively affects metropolitan than non-metropolitan. That was the other thing that we did with Chetty's data that they hadn't done, was to look at whether particular characteristics are more important in rural areas than in urban areas. And the characteristics that are more important in rural areas are inequality and the family structure. Family structure matters more, and inequality matters more in rural areas than it does in urban areas in terms of the predicted upward mobility of the characteristics. But social capital, for example, that has the same impact in urban and rural areas. The fact that there's more social capital, more social networks, for example, in rural places is one of the reasons that rural areas are better. But the impact of social capital is the same. If you live in an urban area with high social capital, you're also better off.
All right, so social capital is the big determinant here, it sounds like. Bruce Weber is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a professor emeritus of applied economics at Oregon State University and the director of the Rural Studies Program there. He led a study with researchers from Louisiana State, from the University of Missouri, and Penn State to look at intergenerational mobility and where it plots out in the landscape, urban and rural, and found that farther from metro areas, you seem to do a little better. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. A couple minutes left here, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So Bruce, you do acknowledge in the research the brain drain known to rural areas, that you know, people get out of school and get out of town.
Right.
So I guess that the major question is, are these people, is the success in the intergenerational upward mobility from people who stayed in the area, or these are people who left them?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. And they didn't answer the question in their research, and we can't answer it in our research with the data that we have, because we or at least in their early research, they didn't distinguish between people who stayed and people who left. And I did actually once have an exchange with Professor Chetty about exactly this question, and what he said was that what they had looked at that question but hadn't reported it, but in fact it was both the people who stayed and the people who left who did well. It wasn't just that the brain drain, the people who left were the ones who succeeded and the ones who stayed did not move up in the income distribution. And I think that's the next question that needs to be answered. And I hope in some of their more recent data, they're starting to get at that question. And if we talk again next year, I may be able to give a little more insight into this question. But it seems to me very important. The preliminary answer is that really, where you grow, it's not just your particular migration out of the place that makes it successful or that makes you successful. Growing up in a place that has high upward mobility is good for both those who stay and those who leave.
Okay, yeah, I'm curious too about that, whether this becomes chessboardy. Like, if you can take a person who lives in one of these really low mobility counties, right, say in eastern or western South Carolina, and plop them in the northern Great Plains, and they do well. I guess the answer would probably be no.
In the more recent research that Chetty and his colleagues have done, they have in fact looked at what they call the causal effect of living in a place. So if you take that child when they're young and move them to North Dakota, they will do better. If you take them when they're late teenagers, it won't make any difference. So what they're asserting in their research is that, in fact, if you move a child from a place that has low mobility to a place that has high mobility, it depends on how long their exposure is to that high mobility place. And the longer they live there, the better their chances. Now, the solution socially is not, you can't move everybody from the Southeast to the, you know, to the Great Plains. So as social policy, we have to worry about what we can do in all places to create the conditions that make it easier for people to succeed economically.
I don't have time to take the call, Rick in Medford. I apologize, but he does say that he raised two kids in the Great Plains and agrees with the point about how good it is to grow up there. So there's one backup for your research. It's again called Intergenerational Mobility of Low-Income Youth in Metropolitan and Non-Metropolitan America, a spatial analysis led by Bruce Weber at Oregon State University, along with J. Matthew Fannin from Louisiana State, Kathleen Miller from the University of Missouri, and Stefan Getz from Penn State. And Bruce Weber, thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, take it easy.